They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, the 99 Restaurants, Sing Sang Cocktail in the Can, Win Waste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Skyrockets in flight.
He gets a breaking ball and sends it to deep center field, and it's gone. It is off the facing of the lower deck out in left center. A home run for Springer, and it's 2-0.
Guerrero hits one. That's got some backspin. Jackie Bradley Jr. to the wall. He can't get it. It is gone. The Blue Jays have hit their second home run in the third inning. It's a two-run shot for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Number 18 for Vladdy. And the Blue Jays have a 4-0 lead.
Rockets in flight. Afternoon delight.
The Baseball Hour. Red Sox pasted last night by the Toronto Blue Jays. 7-2 was the final score. It's easy to dismiss this loss, Jim Murray. It's easy to dismiss it. Like Felger did this afternoon when he says, well, you know, you said it too.
Yeah, I said it was a scheduled loss. That's what it felt like before the first pitch was even thrown last night.
And, you know, I will say in my defense, even Matt McCarthy and I discussed this last night before we went off the air. I said, this feels like 11-3 all over it. This game's got 11-3 written all over it. Connor Seabolt thrust into the rotation because of the injuries to Eovaldi and Whitlock. This is the spot the Red Sox wanted to pitch Whitlock after, you know, returning him from this hip injury, but he got delayed. He hit a snag. And so Seabolt had to make the start, and he got absolutely freaking hammered. So I have a big picture question about this, and then I have a smaller question about this. Michael Kay, who broadcasts the Yankees on Yes Network, as we all know, had some interesting things to say on the Rich Eisen show about Aaron Judge, which we will get to a little later in the program. We'll open up the phone lines right away, 617-779-0985 here on the Baseball Hour. Here's where I want to start. This loss to the Blue Jays last night, the Red Sox are now 2-6 against Toronto this year. They're 1-2 against the Yankees. They're 1-2 against Tampa. That makes them 4-10 against the other playoff contenders in the division. Now, we can debate Tampa because the Rays have had some injuries, and also their roster's not as good as Toronto's. Their roster's not as good as the Yankees. So Tampa, we can debate. I'll tell you what, just for the sake of the discussion, we're going to throw Tampa out. So against New York and Toronto, and those are big-time lineups, both of them big-time lineups, the Red Sox are 3-7 in 10 games. So you tell me, if you're a Red Sox fan out there, do you dismiss that 3-7 because the Red Sox in the early season were playing poorly? Do you put more weight on it because it's against New York and Toronto? And those are the teams you're going to see combined 38 times before this season is complete. 38 games against Toronto and New York. Now, and then while you're thinking about it or while you're formulating your answer, let me give you mine. And that is that this Red Sox team, as constituted, is doing exactly what it should do. They're doing precisely what they were built to do, which is beat the mediocre to pretty good, the bad mediocre and pretty good competition in the American League. And for that matter, all of baseball, all the Red Sox will beat those teams. They'll contend and compete and contend with those teams. Absolutely. But when they get in against the real iron and the real heavyweights, the legitimate championship contenders in the league, what happens? What happens to them and how do they hold up? And I would tell you that last year, they beat the Yankees in the play-in game, and New York was flawed last year. They then upset a Tampa team that was a 100-win team and certainly was worthy of our respect. And don't misunderstand, I'm not dumping on the Rays, but when you look at them, are the Rays really as stacked as the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Blue Jays, again, the really, truly talented teams in Major League Baseball? Or are they something less? And I would say they're something less. Those games were tight. the two games at Fenway Park against Tampa last October, I think, were both decided. They were both walk-offs, if I remember right. One was on a Christian Vasquez homer. I think the other one was on a Enrique Hernandez sacrifice fly. So I look at the Red Sox, and you know what I see? And this isn't dumping on them. I'm telling you what I feel. I see a pretty good team. I see a B or a B-plus team that will beat anyone else who's bad or mediocre. They have a good manager who might help them steal a few wins. But if you put them in against the iron, you know what happens? They lose. Because they don't have the high-end pitching to necessarily go against a lineup like Toronto's, or they don't have the high-end bullpen to match up with the Yankees. And so when they go against the championship-caliber teams in the league and in the majors, the championship-caliber teams, they lose to them. And I think that this is what Chaim Bloom has built. I think he's built a team, the whole analytics model, in fact. And I'm going back to Moneyball and Oakland and Tampa Bay and the Minnesota Twins. They're all built on the same premise.
Yes, and I think you're right. And so I think you being pissed at last night is more a you problem than a them problem. Like, so I think so how they've played this month, I needed to see more because it's like, okay, talk to me. Like, what do you want me to say after you sweep the Tigers? Big whoop. But I thought this weekend series against Cleveland was impressive, and they were winning in different ways, and the bullpen looked good. You now have a real leadoff hitter, and it's like, okay, they're a good team, like you just said. Maz, I thought a month and a half ago this team was even going to sniff the playoffs.
Right.
Now they're going to be in the mix. You just have championship aspirations, which I just think is out of whack for how the Red Sox are now constructed. Like, now, to me, realistic expectations for them could be what they did last year. But are they still, as presently constituted, a championship team? Hell no.
Okay, so Murray, listen, you said a couple of things there that I think are worth touching on, because I said the same thing to someone over the weekend. That Cleveland series should have meant something to you, particularly the game on Saturday. They won that game 4-2. This Red Sox team, more often than not, has struggled to win close, lower-scoring games. And maybe that's redundant because most lower-scoring games are going to be close. You're going to get 3-1, 4-2, things like that. So that meant something to me, too. Those first couple of wins, in fact, in Cleveland, the 6-3 game even, I thought was a pretty close game for the most part. Now, the 8-3 game on Sunday, that was a blowout, but I come back to what you just said. I like teams that can win in different ways. You need to be able to win 3-2 and 2-1 just as easy as you can win 11-6. Whatever it is, you got to find a way to win the game. You got to play off, you got to pitch, you got to play defense, and you got to be able to hit. You got to be able to do them all. And you need to be able to manufacture runs when it's time to manufacture them. Whatever it is, you have to be able to do it. I agree. Why is it wrong for me to be focused on them being championship caliber? Why is that wrong? In this market, that's what we should be all the time. And when I say we, I mean the city. Collectively, all the teams that represent the city should be championship caliber. I believe in that. Doesn't mean you win the championship all the time, but that should be the goal. And I recognize there are cycles in that. Sometimes you're going to do a little bit of a rebuild, but the goal should always be the same, and that's to be championship caliber. What I'm starting to worry about with the Red Sox is that they want to be contender caliber. They want to be playoff caliber. And I think that there's a difference.
Oh, you know, there totally is. And look, haven't they told you that? Hasn't Chaim Bloom himself told you that? I feel like he's reluctant to even use the term you use, championship caliber. He said, you know, we're going to be competitive. Like, that's where it stops. So, no, I get it. You're 100% right. Given this city, the passion for sports here, it should be championship or bust for all of the four major teams. But it just feels to me, with Chaim Bloom and the way this thing is run now, this is probably as good as it's going to get, unfortunately, just to be competitive, get into the playoffs, win a round or two.
Okay, I just have a hard time keeping my mouth shut about that and accepting it. I do. And I can't look at it that way, not when they are capable of so much more. That is really what it is to me, what they are capable of. And I look at this Red Sox team and I say we should be asking more from them because they are capable of more. And I'm not just talking about the players. In fact, I would say many of the players on this team have overachieved. So I know they've won a lot of games of late, and they've played excellent ball since the start of the year. They were 10-19, and then going into last night, they were 32-12 over a stretch of 44 games. So counting last night's loss, 32-13. That's tremendous. We all know that that's exceptional. Except, is it really a coincidence that they beat all the teams they played against. And I'm including Cleveland. I'm including St. Louis. I'm even including the Astros, who I think are championship caliber.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Houston here 2 out of 3, and that was an important series. I thought that was one that really helped validate them. And the finale of that series, if I remember right, was Nick Pivetta's complete game. Okay, so that was a big night for them. But then they go into Toronto, and they face a Toronto lineup that has some of the best hitters in the game, if not the single best hitter in the game, in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And they get waxed. They were never really in the game. Kevin Gausman has dominated them 3 times this year. They can't touch the guy. So now everyone says, well, Gausman owns him. Oh, you were pitching a minor leaguer. They're 2-6. And you also have 3 guys on this roster, if you count Chris Sale, who are unvaccinated and in theory will not be able to play against Toronto if the team goes to Toronto in the playoffs. So is that something that, you know, Shaughnessy wrote about this today in the Globe, but I do find that part of it annoying. So right now, Jarren Duran and Tanner Houck are missing this series because they're unvaccinated. So the Red Sox don't have their leadoff hitter, who's hitting .325, and they don't have their closer, who's been pretty good since he went into the role. And if they face this team in the playoffs, are those guys then going to get vaccinated and be able to play? And if so, well, then why aren't they vaccinated now? Like, why is the line the playoffs? Can't you get a better seating? Couldn't the game, more of the games be at Fenway Park if you finish ahead of Toronto? And that's what you're in right now with the Blue Jays, is this little, you know, tit for tat seesaw back and forth of who's ahead of who in the division, because they're pretty close. So the Red Sox right now are still a half game ahead, but they have the same number of losses. A couple of days ago, the Blue Jays were in front.
If they're not getting the shot now, they're not going to get it by playoff time. Even if they are going to play in Toronto, no way.
So then in the playoffs, you're going to have to play the Blue Jays without your closer, yeah, without Jarren Duran, if he's the leadoff hitter?
Yeah, they'll be shorthanded.
What about Chris Sale if he comes back? Because he's unvaccinated.
Right. Probably the same thing. I mean, those guys seem dug in, especially Sale. We come back. Can I ask you something about Kevin Gausman?
Yes, you can absolutely ask me something about Kevin Gausman when we come back. I also want to play a sound for the listeners out there. From Michael Kay, talking about Aaron Judge and the likelihood of him re-signing in New York, and more importantly, what lengths the Yankees would go to re-sign Aaron Judge. And then later in the show, I also want to get to Connor Siebold. But I think if you're looking at the Red Sox, as happy as you are that they're back in it, and you should be, I am too. I think I keep coming back to the deadline and whether or not they are willing to go to the lengths it's going to take to beat teams like Toronto, New York, or the Dodgers, or the Giants, or whoever it is that comes out of the National League. If people want to say to me, well, worry about those when you get out of the AL, I would tell you, I worry about all the good teams when you won a championship. The goal is a championship. The rules in both leagues are the same now. You get a DH in both. The goal shouldn't be to get to the playoffs. The goal should be to win a championship. We'll play the Michael Kay sound for you when we come back on the Baseball Hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now, more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Judge is on a team that's 30-plus games over .500, and we're not even in July yet. And he also left the bag on the table, which, you know, Michael, will chew up and spit out most human beings who do that in New York City.
Well, it's hard to bet on yourself. And he's won already. I mean, other than, God forbid, if he suffers a catastrophic injury and can't play again, he's going to get way more than the Yankees offered. But the one thing that's just not true that people are putting out there, you know, the Yankees are just agonizing over the fact that he's having such a good season. Rich, they're not agonizing. They're celebrating. They wanted him to have this season. And if they have to pay more money, I mean, the Yankees could pay more money. But I will tell you this, and Yankee fans don't want to hear this, they will pay up to what they think is reasonable. And if there's one crazy owner who's going to say, okay, he gets $45 million a year for 8 years, the Yankees will walk away. They have the walk-away ability. It will anger their fans and all of that, but they want to make a fair deal with him.
That's Michael Kay, Yes Network. He was on the Rich Eisen Show. Eisen asking him about Aaron Judge and what the Yankees will do. And this is an interesting thing to play because we touched on this yesterday, that the Yankees may very well take the same approach with Aaron Judge that the Red Sox take with Xander Bogaerts. It could come to that. Or for that matter, Rafael Devers or anyone else. That they'll set a value. They will stick to that value. And then if the player gets some sort of ridiculous offer, they'll let him go. Now, my question is whether or not the ridiculous offer for New York is the same as the ridiculous offer for Boston. So you heard Michael Kay say there that, you know, they'll offer him eight and call it, you know, eight times 35, eight and 280. And that he thinks they really want to go no more than 7 years. But if push comes to shove, the Yankees will give him the eighth. If someone offers 10 years and, you know, $350 million, Judge is gone. The Yankees won't do it. So let me just ask you this quickly, Murray. If Judge is on the market and the Red Sox, and it takes 10 and 350, do you think the Red Sox would do it?
No, I don't.
Me neither.
Nope.
Me neither.
No, and I base that just on how they handle their business currently with their own star players. If they're not going to do it with guys in-house from their own system that they built up, they're not going to do it with the Yankees. Those days are over. It feels like that arms race between Boston and the evil empire, like that's not something the ownership group cares about anymore.
No, and again, whether or not it's, like, I don't know that they'll do it for any player. Any player. So if Mike Trout were out there, I'm not sure the Red Sox would offer 10 and 350 for him.
Ohtani's going to be out there in like 2 years, right?
Something like that.
And that's another one. And so, you know, so it was one of the days you were off. I was saying, so when that time comes, and odds are he'll stay on the West Coast and probably go with the Dodgers or something anyway. But in a best case scenario, and not just for here, but I think for baseball, is that you have like a real bidding war with a player like that, specifically Ohtani. It'd be so good for Boston, New York, that rivalry again, and maybe build up some buzz once again, and for baseball. But I just don't think that that exists anymore.
No, it probably doesn't. I'm more focused on the part of it of, are the Red Sox still in the market for the big name, big ticket free agents?
Well, no, and so this leads me to my question to you. Do you look at now Kevin Gausman shoving their bats down their throats again and say, why weren't they in on this guy?
Yes. Yes, 100%. Yes, absolutely. I think he was 5 years.
5-1-10.
110 million. Yeah, 22 per.
Who would you rather have, him or Trevor Story?
I mean, it feels like a pretty good deal, doesn't it?
Yes.
5 times 22. For a guy like that, and he's a control pitcher, doesn't walk people. I'm not saying he doesn't throw hard. I mean, he'll get some strikeouts, but did he walk anybody last night? I don't even know. That game was over so fast that, honestly, I stopped paying a lot of attention to it. But I know entering last night, Gausman had not walked a guy against the Red Sox all year. So I don't know whether he walked one last night or not, but he has dominated them. He's beaten them 3 times now, or at least the Jays have won all 3 games. In which Gausman has pitched against him. So should they have been in on him? Yes. Yes. He walked 2 last night, struck out 10. So, you know, this is what they're missing. They're missing a front-end kind of pitching. That's what they're missing. The whole Judge thing, though, it does, you know, there is a connection there. I think all teams in baseball are starting to shy away from those 10-year deals, which I encourage them to. Those are bad deals, more often than not. But I do think there's a line somewhere there where you say, Xander Bogaerts at age 30, can't the Red Sox offer him 6 years and call it $200 million? $37 million a year or something like that? And I'm pushing the envelope.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's actually less than that, $32, $33 million a year. Yeah, I think they should be able to sign that kind of deal. Trevor Story is 6 years and 140. Like, once you start going 6 years, 140 to 180 is only another $4 million a year, $5 million a year. It's not that big a difference. And my math sucks. It's off, I know. But
no,
you
but
get
I get
the idea.
I get the point.
So anyway, 617-779-0985. We'll take your calls. And we'll take your calls on all things baseball. John's in Cambridge. John, what do you got? John!
Tony, I don't want to let you off Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go.
I'm here, Tony. I really think this issue with Duran and his buddy Hauk, not being vaccinated is much bigger, and I don't want you to get off it. I think Dan really hit the nail on the head. They go to the playoffs. They don't have these guys to play them in Toronto. It's like starting one down. And this is the time Chaim needs to get out and trade these guys, max value, shore up the bullpen, put Whitlock in the bullpen, get rid of Duran because he's an ignoramus, and trade now at high value.
Okay, so, John, real quick, when you say Duran's an ignoramus, why do you say that? And I shouldn't even ask you this, but because he won't get vaccinated?
No, because he gave an excuse. He's doing the research. Do the research a year and a half ago. That's a bunch of bull.
Okay, all right. So that's what all right. I'm just making sure that your distaste for it wasn't political in nature. Okay, so I don't care about the politics. All right, I'm not going to sit here and argue the politics with you. I'm interested in the baseball. Here is what I care about. The Red Sox are in it in a playoff race. One of the teams they're playing and is one of their biggest division foes is obviously based in Canada. To go and play there, you have to be vaccinated. When the Yankees went to Canada early in the year, there were a couple of guys on the roster who weren't vaccinated. And most people believe those two were Aaron Judge and Anthony Rizzo. Before the team went north, they got vaccinated. The Yankees got on the same page and they said, we are in this to win a championship. We're going to get our crap together and we're all going to do it. The Red Sox, when they signed Trevor Story, who was unvaccinated, had Xander Bogaerts call. One of the reasons Bogaerts called was to preach to Story about the value of being vaccinated for those games in Toronto. And Shaughnessy alluded to some of this in his column, but the whole idea of Red Sox players are or are not angry, and, you know, it's the good ship lollipop, and no team ever wants to suggest there's any sort of dissension when it comes to these issues. But if it was important enough for Xander Bogaerts to call Trevor Story to convince him to get vaccinated because they needed to win the games in Toronto, then how can the players, or how can someone like Bogaerts at the very least, be happy that how can Duran are not vaccinated? He can't be. So again, you have 25 guys on a roster, on an active roster. 23 of them are vaccinated, and I'm not even counting Chris Sale, who's obviously on the injured list. He's unvaccinated as well. 23 of them are unvaccinated and are going to go play, and the two who are not, the other 23 aren't going to look at them and say, well, we did it, how come you won't? And I get the whole personal choice thing. I'm just telling you, when you are on a team, there is a measure of sacrifice involved. Okay, and you have to make that sacrifice for the team. And whether it's a vaccination or anything else, you've got to give up a little bit of yourself. Pockets is in Leominster. Good, Pockets.
Hey, man, let me get you off a speaker here.
Okay, what do you got?
The schedule coming up. We off of Thursday, and then we play 17 in a row. We got the Cubs, and then the next 14 are against Yankees and Tampa.
Yep.
7-7, 4 against the Yankees at home, 4 on the road against Tampa. Big series. What do you think they need to do? They got to go 5-2 at home?
Okay, look, I don't look at it purely as the 7 at home. I look at it as 14 in a row against Tampa and New York. 14 in a row, 7 at home, 7 on the road. So of those 14, what's an acceptable number? You tell me. I always look to win. I don't look to tie. So I would say at home, you want to go 4-3, 5-2, and on the road, you want to go 4-3. So I'd like 8 or 9 wins in there. If you're championship caliber, you're going for 8 or 9 wins. I want to win 3 out of those 4 series. That alone should get you, 8, 9 wins. So I want wins. I want wins. I'm not looking to tread water. And I include Toronto. I include this series. So let's not just eliminate this series because it happens to be a week before they played Tampa and New York. The Toronto series is every bit as important. They went up there last night and they get their brains beat in. And I know it was Connor Siebold, but he happens to be one of the guys that Chaim Bloom traded for. And most of you don't give a rat's ass about Connor Siebold. You don't remember ever having seen him pitch before. And I will tell you, I watched him in spring training of 2021. after the Red Sox had acquired him the year before. The guy I saw last night is not the same guy. I'll explain why when we come back after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
But a guy like Connor Siebold, who the team got in the trade with Philly last year, he threw one changeup in one of his early outings, Alex. I think it was his first one that was absolutely ridiculous. I imagine that he's a guy as a right-hander that you look at and say, well, he can get lefties out because of that changeup.
Yes, it's a good changeup. And the thing that it kind of like got the attention of everybody here is the velocity. You know, he was throwing 96, 97.
He jumped
out of the chute here. He jumped, you know, and a testament for him. You know, he did an outstanding job in the offseason. But I mean, if he can maintain that velocity up, I'm not saying he's going to throw 97 the whole time, but 94, 95 with the separation, with that action of the changeup, he's going to be a good one.
That was a little over a year ago. I did a podcast with Alex Cora before the season started in 2021 and asked him a number of different questions about the team, some of the things that had happened during the offseason, the trading of Andrew Benintendi, for example, bunch of things. One of the things that I asked him about Whitlock at that point, I also asked him about Connor Siebold, as you just heard there. And you heard Cora say, well, the velocity jumped out at us. He was throwing 96, 97 in spring training. Now Connor Siebold's down to 92 again. So my question is, what the hell happened there? How did his velocity spike in spring training of that year? And then all of a sudden now, it's gone. Now he's pitching at 90 to 92 again. Like, I don't understand what the, you know, why the change. That's a dramatic change.
Off the program.
So again, Mark, and look, I'm not...
Sticky stuff, something?
Yeah, like, I wonder...
Something's up.
Was there a spider tech element to it? I don't know. But it was bizarre. You know, when they traded for Josh Winkowski, Connor Siebold, and they picked up Garrett Whitlock, all in that one-year span, I said, okay, I see what Bloom's doing. He's bringing in young pitching into the organization. Hopes he hits on a couple of these guys or, you know, two out of three, one out of three, whatever. See what you got. So I watched them all in spring training of that year. Whitlock stuck out right away. Stuck out right away. And Siebold stuck out at that time. Winkowski less so. But now I look at Siebold, he looks like a different guy. And last night, his changeup is still excellent. He's got a really good change. Excellent. But it's not as effective if he's throwing 92 or 91 or 90. I mean, and, you know, if he's throwing 94, 95, you heard Cora say it there, it makes all the difference in the world. So I did not see the same guy last night that I saw in the spring. The changeup was the same. The rest of the stuff wasn't, specifically the fastball. We'll go back to your calls. Chris is in Hartford on Jaron Duran. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, Maz. The kid is actually going to be an all-star, okay? His hands, they lifted him up. I don't know why they didn't do that earlier. What do you think?
So you're obviously talking about the big change in Duran, and your comment line said, what do I think of Duran now compared to a year ago? And I think that he is a better player. He clearly looks like he belongs in the big leagues. The defense still scares me. And he hasn't hit lefties. They picked their spots with him a little bit, so they've really isolated him against right-handed pitching, or at least that's where he's had all of his success. So do I think Duran can play? I'm getting there. He still scares me in the outfield. But I also think that the Red Sox deserve some criticism here for how they've handled Duran. So if you remember during the COVID year, they completely revamped Duran's swing. They turned him into this launch angle kind of guy. They stuck him in a AAA in 2021 in Worcester. He had all kinds of home runs. The place is a launching pad, but he swung and missed a ton. And he came up to the big leagues, and it was a mismatch. He was overwhelmed. He was not ready for the big leagues. More importantly, he couldn't use his greatest asset, which is his speed. So you know what they did? They went back the other way, because now, again, the game's changing. So this to me is, look, Bloom's in charge of the baseball operation, so I give them credit for reacting to the change in rules, but I feel like they are now, you can only yank a player around so many times before you completely screw his head up. So now Duran has picked up on this. I'm glad to see it. But I hope they don't just continue to tinker with him and mess with him. Tanner Houck should have been in the big leagues earlier than he was. Part of the reason he wasn't is because they messed with him and tinkered with him. And so, I think overall, Tampa, and, I say that as a compliment to Bloom, has done a good job of developing players, developing them, not just identifying talent, which is the draft part of it or the signing part of it or the trade part of it. I mean, once you get them, how do you fix them? And they've been pretty good at that. Tampa has been, and I would say Bloom's done a good job of that too. That I like seeing. Jacob in a car. Jacob, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So, as it pertains to the game last night, I don't put a whole lot of stock in that game because it was Seabold's first start on the road against a good team, and a particularly stellar lineup. I would give Seabold another start. And when it comes to Gausman, yes, he's owned him this season, but it is just one pitcher, which is why I want to see tonight and tomorrow night, because they're also going against Stripling and Manoah, the other starters who's been good for them this season.
Okay, so Jacob, what I would say to you is this. Are you going to see Gausman in the playoffs if you play them? Because my answer is yes. So it's only one pitcher. Well, he can pitch twice in a seven-game series. The Jays have won all three times you've faced him this year, so they can't hit Kevin Gausman. So if you face them in the playoffs, that should worry you. And more importantly, and I get what you mean about Seabold. So, they threw Seabold last night. Seabold last night, to me, doesn't worry me in and of itself as it relates to Seabold. But I do question whether or not the Red Sox have the kind of pitching that is necessary to beat a team like Toronto that has a talented lineup, or for that matter, a team like New York that has a talented lineup. Because when you get into the playoffs, guess what? You're going to see teams that can hit. More often than not, there are going to be teams that can pitch. But more often than not, when you get into the playoffs, the big difference you're going to see is teams that can do both. They can pitch and they can hit. So do the Red Sox have the capacity? Are they built in such a way that you can look at them and say, they can beat anybody at any time? Or do you look at them and say, well, they have holes in certain areas that are going to limit their ability to beat highly competitive teams? And this gets back to me to that whole question of, do you want to be a playoff contender or do you want to be a championship contender? And this is another one that always drives me crazy, Murray, is when people say, well, the best way to win a championship is just knock on the door every year and get your chances and you'll get your share. The Atlanta Braves tried that and they only won one. And you know why? Because the Braves left holes on their roster that they weren't willing to extend for, specifically a closer. And it cost them championships. So, to me, now look, I believe in the whole idea of being competitive every year. I want that. But I think to win championships sometimes, you have to extend. So again, let me ask you, Murray, just quickly. Do you think the Red Sox right now are built to win a championship?
No, not at all. They're built to be a contender and maybe mirror what they did last year, especially if they add at the deadline, kind of like they did last year. Names you've really never heard of to the bullpen and maybe a small splash player like Kyle Schwarber.
So sometimes I just, don't get me wrong. I'm all for finding talent places. But Hansel Robles, are you really going to put him on the mound in New York or Toronto in the eighth inning of a playoff game? What's that going to go like? Let alone in Houston, where you put guys on the mound in those big spots and all of a sudden they can't throw strikes. Those high-pressure situations where everybody gets a little bit tighter. Do you have the guys to handle those spots? And I don't think the Red Sox do. Steve is in Rockland. Steve, go ahead.
Maz,
This question's been answered before, but I wanted to see what you had to say. Bobby Dalbec, okay, 205 with one or two homers. Why can't the Red Sox find somebody in their entire system that can play first base better than that? Okay, I'll hang up and listen, Matt.
Okay, so Steve, I think they have found someone in their system that can. He's just not ready yet. And that is Tristan Casas, who was a first-round pick and has had some injury issues at AAA this year. But Tristan Casas projects as that guy. He's the guy that the Red Sox are going to have at first base for years to come. Big left-handed hitter, left-handed power hitter, who's got great plate discipline, you know, huge size. I mean, he can mash the ball. Okay, so everything points to Casas being that guy. My gripe with the Red Sox at first base isn't that they're waiting for Tristan Casas. It's that they're leaving the hole. They're basically plugging the hole while waiting for Tristan Casas. And what they're doing to plug the hole isn't good enough. So you know what I find really alarming about the Bobby Dalbec thing is that the Red Sox took the cheese on it. Bobby Dalbec was not an elite prospect in the minor leagues. He was okay, hit some home runs. They moved him around a couple of positions, but it's not like Dalbec was like a guy in the minor leagues like Mookie Betts was, who was hitting in 300s at every level they put him at. Dalbec was never that guy. And so somewhere along the line, they just started to believe that Dalbec could play in the big leagues, and they gave him a shot. Then Dalbec at the end of last year, Jimmy Stewart, do you remember this? Dalbec got hot at the end of last year, and then after the season, there was a report, and it might have been Gammons again in The Athletic. He wrote something to the effect of the Red Sox believe that Bobby Dalbec could be a 40-homer guy.
I believe that. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember? Like that?
I remember it, and also I remember J.D. Martinez has been working with Bobby Dalbec too, so that might be part of it.
Okay, so but the idea that the Red Sox looked at him and believed he could be a 40-home-run hitter, and if I remember, you know, I'll see if I can find it, but there was something attached to it of, you know, he could hit 270 and hit 40 home runs in the big leagues. You know, an everyday first baseman. And I looked at that and said, well, that feels a little delusional. Like, Bobby Dalbec had a season where he basically hit for 6 weeks.
Delusional or PR spin.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the Red Sox are buying in on the cheese or taking the cheese. And here it is. I found it. September 18th of last year. I'm going to read you the exact quote, Murray, so that I get this right.
We can laugh at it together.
Yes, we can laugh at it together is right. Okay, I'll find it. One Sox official says, I think we see that Bobby Dalbec can be a 40-home-run guy. A 40-home-run guy.
So that's his expected home run output.
Okay, we think that Bobby Dalbec can be a 40-home-run guy.
Seems high.
Bobby Dalbec right now, in his second full season in the major leagues, is batting .207 and has 5 home runs in 68 games. 5 home runs. Last year he hit 25 in 133 games, and he got hot as a pistol there in the second half when he did the majority of his damage. If this sounds like me ripping on Bobby Dalbec, it really isn't. What I'm ripping on is the evaluation. So Dalbec last year hit .240 when all said and done with 25 home runs. He got 453 plate appearances. This year he's gone backwards and he's 27. He's not a kid. There isn't a lot more room for growth there.
Well, Maz, did they say 40 home runs per season or 40 home runs career-wise? Because he's 2 away from 40 home runs in a career.
Okay, so there you go, Jimmy. He's got 38. Maybe that's what they meant.
Meant career 40 home
runs. I do like that idea, Jimmy. He's a 40 home run career guy.
I'm just trying to figure out what their expectations are for him.
It's a very sarcastic, cynical reply from you, but I do like it.
I'm trying my best.
It's really about the evaluation of Bobby Dalbec. If you watched Bobby Dalbec play for a full season, now a season and a half, does anyone really look at him and feel like he is a full-time answer at the position? Because I don't. I really never have. And again, that's not on Dalbec. That's on the decision-making and the evaluators. What a mistake. We'll wrap it up when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Tonight, the baseball.
Now, more baseball and more Mazz.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Tonight, the Baseball Hour brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change, who wants to help you prepare your car for this 4th of July holiday weekend. They offer completely contactless service with their 15-minute drive-through service. You don't even need to make an appointment, so visit getanoilchange.com for coupon and save on your next oil change.
I said it before the season. I know a lot of people talk about four teams. I always talk about five teams because I think the program they're running in Baltimore is really good. Their pitching is outstanding. We knew that coming into the season. So everything in this division can pitch. Everything in this division, they can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and it's going to be a grind.
It's Alex Cora last night. And if you want to know why I like Cora as a manager, it's because he understands this part of it. It's a grind. You're playing 162. You're playing, 17 days in a row without a day off. You get tired. Mentally, you get tired. And so you got to find a way to take a long approach to it and find a way to have the energy every day and grind your way through the season. Okay, this is where I think Cora's real value as a manager comes. A, he understands it, and B, can get his team to focus on a regular basis. It's hard. Hard to do. I want to play one other Cora cut for you before we let you go here. This also relates to, the overall performance of the team and the outlook for the team. Go ahead, Jimmy, fire it away.
We're going to be banging heads for the rest of the season, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We had expectations coming into the season to make the playoffs, and, we will keep working for that.
Okay, so again, now Cora says we have expectations to make it to the playoffs. Last year, if you remember, during the season, he said at one point, the goal is to win the World Series. I don't remember him saying that again since. Maybe he has. Maybe he's been told to choose his words more carefully or don't say World Series, say playoffs. Hard to promise a World Series. But I don't think they should shy away from that. I think it should be, no, we're championship driven here. We want to win championships. That's the goal.
When did he say that last year? Was it May?
Somewhere in the middle. Okay. It might have been right around this time, Murray. Want to say like June. Somewhere in there, or, he started talking about winning a championship. I'll see if I can find it. But I don't think we should ever lose sight of that here. And look, I get it. You have to do one thing before you can do the next. But in this market, and I would say the same for the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Patriots. Championship driven. That is the goal. Not to contend and be the Atlanta Braves who made the playoffs 15 years in a row, but never won it. And won it once. Okay? They should have won it more than they did. That's not the goal. The goal is to seal the deal. Okay? Not just to get to the playoffs, because I think that's a cop-out, but also doing the necessary steps to win the championship once you get there. Jones and Arcan, coming up next. We'll catch you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.